Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and challenges in steering AI initiatives within their organization. I am your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have the pleasure of hosting a true trailblazer in the field of AI transformation, Saima Shafiq. She's the Senior Vice President and Head of Applied AI Transformation at PNC Bank, one of the leading financial institutions in the United States. Saima has a passion for innovation and a wealth of experience in leveraging AI to drive business transformation. Saima is at the forefront of shaping the future of banking through artificial intelligence. Please join me in welcoming her. Saima, thank you so much for joining us today. We are eager to delve deep into your journey as a leader in the AI ML space and gain insight to how PNC is leveraging this cutting-edge technologies to drive success.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you, Sanjay.
Wonderful. Saima, as you know, our listeners are global AI experts, AI practitioners, AI aspirational people, CEOs of companies. There are a lot of people who obviously aspire to be where you are at. As I told you, we address different aspects. One is inspiring others. Second is attracting talent. And third is creating a collaborative environment for you and others like you. So can you tell our listeners about your journey and what inspired you to pursue a career in artificial intelligence, Saima?
Sure. It's funny. I find it quite interesting that almost 25 years ago, when I did my undergrad project in artificial intelligence in training neural networks, really just having fun training the neural network to understand, to recognize handwriting, taking my mother's handwriting particularly to be really feeling proud. At the time, I had no clue this is where I was pursuing my career in. So yeah, it all started there with a simple thing of having a passion to take my mother's language, train it to the program, and show it to my mom. I can train your language and this computer understands even if you handwrite. Back in the day, it was a big thing, handwriting recognition.
Wow. So we have your mom to thank for you being in this position. So listeners, find your mom and see if there's some inspirational story here. But that's a great message to our listeners. Saima, tell our listeners about your role and responsibilities as the head of applied AI transformation at PNC. What does that mean? That's a big title, which a lot of people, including me, don't understand.
Oh, yeah, I would love to. It's a title and it's the role of my dream. Have been in artificial intelligence for a long time, as I mentioned, right? So coming from the technology background and then in for last several years now, having that AI transformation role has really enabled me to have the responsibility of identifying potential areas of opportunity within the bank where AI can help. Now, this goes with aligning with our business partners, several of them, senior executives managing different business domains, their own segments, different kinds of roles, whether from digital or, you know, client care or business operations or, you know, client sales and services or, you know, really just monitoring, whatever the case may be, they have their functions that they perform every day. And in my role, I get to sit with them, understand how they do things today, and take notes on where I believe we can have an impact by leveraging AI to transform how they operate day to day. And the broad strokes of where we invest in terms of bringing in AI technologies to change the game is, are there opportunities for us to make a better client experience or generate revenue if we had to? You know, there are areas when we want to really heavily invest in improving the operational process and having that excellence for the sake of cost reduction and ultimately being able to scale. It's all about allowing the existing teams to do better and enjoy what they do and spend more time where they would have more fun, right? Really, my role allows me to look at the current state of operations across these different business domains and come up with proposed solutions. But then the fun part from a technical standpoint beyond this business operations is when I get to sit with my data scientists and my architects and engineers and experts from an AI field standpoint, and brainstorming with them, hey, what do you think? This is how we can solve this. So really coming up with those transformative ideas, which can be big bang, like fully modernizing from something completely different, or solving the problems or the pockets of the problems that exist, and having that brainstorming with our tech partners, with my team, and then taking it back to the business as a proposal, and finding them seeing so fascinated and interested in taking this further and seeing that come to fruition, and not only then deploying it, but maintaining it for the sake of eternity, that, hey, we are going to make it better every step of the way because things will evolve. It's that's part of my role. It's fun. And I've really been partying for the last several years since I took this AI transformation role. So very grateful for that.
Fantastic. Now, Saima, you have brought up so many amazing points that for our listeners, I want to follow up. One, obviously, is you talk about engaging with key decision makers. So the first question in there, because there are people who are listening who say, hey, how does Saima perform this role? What do I need to do? In the bank, which is, banks are highly regulated in the US, is there high visibility, or take any financial institution, for something that you're doing? Is there high visibility for AI or for the AI role?
Oh my God, yes.
So talk to that to our listeners so they understand what it is.
Yeah, I mean, especially being in a regulated industry here, every use of AI, every single use case that you are working on, what I was just answering previous to this question, I was saying, hey, we work with the business teams and understand the operations, mm-hmm. and then we propose a solution. But guess what? That proposal doesn't make it back to them if I am not doing my due diligence in making sure that as an AI strategy delivery leader, I comply with the regulatory boundaries that have been set for the bank. So I have to be fully knowledgeable and up to date on the latest standards that have been enforced and the things that I have to follow. Am I using the best tools? Is the bank approving all of those when I'm building something custom? Am I not over-investing in something that I could have used a better tool, for instance? So yes, getting a buy-in from your risk and compliance and legal partners is an essential part of my job. And just doing that so many times, like if you've done hundreds of use cases, it's not something you have to go and ask for every use case. But if somebody's starting new, of course, they would have to learn and educate themselves. For me, it's like my part of my day job. I am on the working sessions with them every day as we are defining and redefining our governance practices here.
Again, you have brought up some very, very interesting points, Saima, if you don't mind. So there is buy-in from the leadership. That's one thing you said. And this is high visibility because of the things that you're doing. And one thing that you touched on, which is what some of the questions that came up for you were, what kind of skills does somebody need to have? So it's not just knowing AI, ML, but regulatory, knowing how to go to the executives, et cetera, is also very important, Saima, in that role?
In a leadership role, absolutely, yes. But I would say, depending on where they are in the career, they may be data scientists who really have a passion to build models. You don't have to worry about it if you have a good strategy leader leading you along the way. It cannot be done by one individual who is doing it all. So I'm not doing it alone. I have a large team. And they all fit in the different pieces of the puzzle to make it all together, right? So yeah, as long as you have somebody who is guiding you, keeping you within the guardrails, that is sufficient. Depends on where you want to excel. Some people do want to excel in making sure that we are following the process and they will help us along the way. And there are others who want to code, who want to architect, who want to write models, who want to train data or explore data. And there are those who would excel in monitoring how are things doing in production, how our tools or applications are performing. Is there anything having a drift that I need to look at? So it really depends on the passion and personality. And one of the essential things that I have enjoyed in my life and I give it back is I tell my team and my people, tell me what you enjoy. What would you like to do? I don't want to tell them what I need. I want to tell them what I think they would enjoy doing, because then it will be easy for them. It will be fun for them and they will produce good quality work. So we have a variety of functions within the AI delivery, and everybody does the pieces that they're good at and pieces that they would enjoy, along with some of the regular day-to-day that everybody has to deal with.
So I think in summary, and we'll come to the work environment down the road, it's a multifaceted team that you have, Saima. Saima, a couple of points you touched on, if I may ask, because that's of interest to our listeners, is From a banking standpoint, you talked about how it could save costs. Then you talked about how it can improve customer experience. Talk a little bit right now from the conversations I have with leaders like you. Customer service seems to be one of the low-hanging fruits out there, whether it's the chat box or virtual agents or things like that. Obviously, fraud protection also is a big issue in the banks using AI, neural networks, etc. Talk a little bit about, are you seeing some results in terms of customer engagement, cost savings, etc.? Talk a little bit, because ultimately AI is not for the sake of AI. Ultimately, you want to see the return on investment, and it can be tangible, intangible. So tell our listeners about some of those things.
Yeah. So for each initiative that you're working on across the globe, across the industry, wherever organizations are adopting AI, for any of these branches that we just talked about, right, customer experience improvement or operational efficiencies or avoiding penalties and you know, the litigations or fines, because you want to have better sophisticated controls that are automated in conjunction with people actually monitoring things. So all of those combined, return on investment has been visibly documented and reported back on each of these areas. Now, how fast one area grows compared to another depends on multiple factors. So there is no doubt, there is no question. Take up on the simple example of code generation, for instance, right? There are multiple case studies showing that our latest Gen AI tools are going to offer that productivity in development environment for each everyday developers. So those things are there, they are given. But does that mean we also have to add more risk frameworks or have more security checkpoints and stage gates to ensure that we are not forgetting and taking it too easy and, you know, leaving the steering wheel alone? So those things do combine before we actually put a final number around return on investment. So I think all of that is important. But yeah, very clearly seen numbers in all of these areas, automation for fraud detection, for, you know, customer assistance, or for speeding up our processing by analyzing documents, or, you know, reducing manual data entry by uplifting or maybe, you know, populating the information already ahead of time, determining patterns. It's just like countless areas. I find it hard to not find the process where AI can help. You may not need it, but, you know, because it's like an overkill in some cases. So you want to have those experts who will tell you what is the best tool to use. It can probably sometimes just be dealt with like traditional automation as well. So that there are scenarios to be considered, but return on investment is absolutely there if you're doing it right. And if you are encouraging adoption with a very thoughtful process, you can't just dump it on people and say, use it. You'll have to have a real good roadmap on how you pilot it, how you validate it first, and you're using the best tools for development and so on. And then you pilot it and you let people experience and give you feedback to improve it every day. And then you will see returns.
That's great. So are these returns tangible or intangible in your view?
I think they're tangible. The intangible parts are more like, oh, we, you know, sometimes it may not be that clear for certain areas where you were not doing something in the past. And you would say, oh, you know what? It was only taking this much time. But guess what? Let's say you were doing some paperwork in the past, giving you an example. Mm-hmm. And if you had a need to look at the data from that paperwork, you would pull that up on demand when needed. So you were not spending too much time on it. And you would say, I don't need an automation there. But later on, all of a sudden, you realize, you know what? If that data was available to me in a structured format, I could run some trend analysis on that or make some recommendations or do some risk scoring around it. Yeah, that was the work you were never investing in historically. But guess what? Now that you have maybe digitized it, there are other non-tangible ways of using that data that you never thought of, which will then result into another initiative where you can have tangible outputs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. Saima, you said you have a buffet of amazing dishes. I mean, you basically, you look at every area can be, you know, applied. Artificial intelligence can be applied to all of them. How do you choose which one? Or, you know, because every function you can apply AI or machine learning to that. How do you pick and choose some of those areas which are where you say, hey, this will work? And this is for our listeners who are, you know, looking to be in that kind of a role?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think that is a very important question. More often than we want, people do get carried away by saying, yeah, I can solve it, let's go do it. Thankfully, I feel like we have been able to educate better across the globe and across in our company. Particularly, I know we have done a very thorough job in educating teams on how to prioritize better. They are very accustomed to now that every time they come to me or another AI person, they would say, you know, I want to do this. And I very politely would say, all right, that sounds fantastic. Let's talk about ROI. Okay. So we never say no, but we question on what is the value? What is the business story here? And then sometimes, actually, most of the times, it may be that there is significant value. You can't have like a threshold on below this many million dollars or above this many million dollars. That may not be a very reasonable, you know, criteria. So you put everything in your queue or in your pipeline, and then you say, let's say these are the top few. And which ones of those, by the way, align with our leadership or our strategic vision for the year? What is it that our company's executives are right now trying to accomplish in the next 12 to 24 months? Does it align with their strategic objectives? And if it does, that's a higher priority, even if it is exactly equal to another objective in your pipeline.
So aligning with the strategic objectives of the leadership, that's a great point that you made, Saima.
Yeah, because then you will get all the support and you will most likely you will also get others working on the similar effort in their spaces. Let's say there is a digital transformation effort going on somewhere, and now you can add AI because that's going to double their benefit at the end, right? The return on investment is more guaranteed. So yeah, aligning with the strategic objectives and their short-term, near-term, long-term goals will enable you to get the support that you want rather than doing something in a silo, which may look like a cool POC for you, but nobody has time to look at it right now.
You have so much going on. How do you structure your team within, and what roles do you find most crucial for success?
Oh, that's an important question too. I'm very fortunate. We have wonderful talent here at PNC. Really, really impressive variety and range of, you know, the number of years of experience, starting from fresh grads to those who have been with us for 35 years or more. Good talent spread at PNC here. And in my team particularly, and then our peers as well, who we work with, you know, the key ingredient I see before I even go to the roles is commitment to improve, commitment to serve our clients better. I mean, we call it client obsession, that we are obsessed about making every single client experience count, every single client interaction count as meaningful to you know, satisfy and meet their needs. Now, when it comes to the team and the skills and talents, in my organization, for instance, I have four broad subgroups in my team. We have a team of data scientists where they're all data scientists working on different kinds of machine learning models or document AI, or you can add maybe a little bit of conversational AI there too. Really, you know, focusing on the traditional methods of AI using models. There is another leg, which is a full vertical on architecture and engineering. You can imagine we are not just building a model and shipping it off. We are building applications. That's why it's called applied AI. So I have the group of architects and engineers, full stack developers, front end, back end developers. The third vertical that I have is on the product practice. So on the product side, as you can imagine, for running your agile crews, you need a scrum master or a product owner, your quality engineers who would all work and stitch the things together and make the execution smooth. The fourth one that I have on the team is rapid prototyping team. So that's like more of an innovation, you know, hub within. It's a smaller group, but they really take every use case that comes, which we have justified the value for. Business value is happening in parallel. And if there is reasonable enough value, we want to do the tech feasibility assessment. And in our tech feasibility assessment, as you can see in the buffet and the long menu that we have dozens of solutions back there that we can use. And it's not one size fits all. So whatever the problem is given to us, we experiment it on different techniques to find out which one would be best. And do we still need another? Because sometimes there are niche products that you have to use. So this prototyping team is really the innovative mindset of let's take this problem and try it on a couple of different approaches to choose the best idea. And then the last but not the least is generative AI, which is the most popular one nowadays. I have intentionally pulled them out of the DocAI data scientist machine learning kind of a team, although they have all the skills. Mm-hmm. They are focusing on generative AI to give it all the focus that it desires right now.
Wow. So a bunch of questions on that, because we have listeners who are potentially looking to apply to you for amazing jobs. So I have multiple questions. One is, you have some great universities to pull talent from also, right? You have UPenn, you have Carnegie across, you know, PNC is spread out, and there are many other universities. That's a big advantage, I think, that PNC has. The second thing is, are there, when you said you look for people who are customer obsessed or customer focused, besides that, what other things do you look for? Because as our listeners who are saying, hey, I want to apply to, because, hey, you have some fantastic groups. You have an innovation group. You have a product group. You have, you know, a Gen AI group. So they all sound great. But what does, besides customer obsession, and I don't know about, again, I could be wrong, Osama, that a data scientist, how customer obsessed he is. He's working on R or Python, but maybe they are customer obsessed. But how do you pick? I mean, let's say, you know, somebody comes in with a great degree from Carnegie, but, you know, there must be some other intangibles you're looking for, right?
Yeah. Well, one important thing that I find obvious in the people on our team is their problem-solving attitude. They're all engineers by heart. They may be whatever role they are engineers at heart looking to solve problems. And for them, the pleasure is when they build something or solve something that makes the customer happy. And in our case, the customer may not be ultimate customer of the bank. It may be the business customer that you're serving to build an application for them. So for them, the pleasure that I see on their face is when they're demoing something that they just completed, if whatever it is. The satisfaction that I see in them, even when they were given feedback on, if you modified this, if only I had that root cause identified, and they take it seriously, and they are willing to go solve the problem and take it through the finish line, it's that mindset, that you're not going to give up, and you're not going to just say, oh, I cannot do it because there is too much paperwork, or there is too much procedures I have to follow, or there are too many questions I have to answer. They're not going to give up. They're going to say, okay, let's get the job done. Let's make it structured, organized, and straighten our things such that we can focus on what we enjoy. And I see that that's what they enjoy, solving problems for our customers.
So solving problems for customers is a very, very, besides, you know, the table stakes are obviously you need to be a data scientist if you're applying for the data scientist. But beyond that, customer focus is very, very important.
Oh, yes.
Saima, for listeners, for your peers, et cetera, you have four groups, amazing groups. What kind of tools and technologies do these groups use in terms of AI, ML?
Yeah, lots of them. And I mean, more than I can count. I wouldn't even know all of them, honestly, because sometimes the teams are large. The data scientists are exploring new things every day.
And just a few big ones, yeah.
Yeah, just a few big ones. I could say, you know, there are a couple different document AI solutions that we use. For machine learning, we, of course, are, you know, big Python and R fans. from an architecture engineering standpoint, we do use Java, Angular, React, Spring Boot, all of these frameworks. There is, from the product practice standpoint, our Jira and Confluence are our favorites that we do all the times. Security scanning and all, you know, there are standard tools that are built for code scanning and whatnot. I think there are chatbot tools that we have for virtual assistants, conversational AI. And I don't know, I mean, there are Gen AI tools, of course, that we are doing, trying multiple different things, some cloud-based, some on-prem-based. So yeah, I mean, it's a large toolbox. And we, as I said, when we're trying to solve a problem, we try different tools to see which one is the best. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about really from attracting talent, people may have skills that we don't have, and they come in and they show. I tell my team on a regular basis, every staff meeting that I have, I say, hey, I love it when you guys come to me and brag about something that you have achieved. It could be a simple prototype. Show me and feel excited about it. Don't think that I will think it's small. I love to see your passion. So if you have built something really small, still show it to me, feel proud about it. As long as you can feel passionate and, you know, and can actually feel that I can go showcase this to somebody and they will find value in it, that's all that we really need. It doesn't matter. You don't have to fit into my toolbox. You can bring a new tool with you.
Wow. So is it like a Swiss Army knife? You have a little bit of everything in many ways. That's incredible. But I think the message he's saying is have passion, even if it's for small applications, small successes. That's what she would like to see happen. We talked about the universities. Does PNC engage with the broader AI community, Emma, like research institutions, startups, other industry players?
Absolutely. We have a lot of partnerships. So okay. One of the things that really has inspired me over the years is PNC has partnerships with industries and educational institutes, starting from like really like a preschool level until the university graduates. I mean, there are events and activities where PNC participates and invests like potential committed dollars and millions of dollars there. And from a talent perspective, the graduates come to us through several different programs. Some of them are called technology development programs or some are internship programs and whatnot. And we give them an opportunity to come and experience different groups within the organization before they choose where they want to stay. So it's a powerful way that companies like PNC, although we are a bank, financial services company, it's such technology-oriented, technology-focused, technology-obsessed that when we hire these graduates from universities all across the United States, we will allow them to sit in different groups within the organization to experience the flavors. And at the end, they do get a choice to stay where they want to stay.
Wow. So you get to get many diverse areas of experience within the organization. That's fantastic.
You mentioned, sorry, I didn't answer the startup question. So yeah, several partnerships with startups as well as scale-ups. So yeah, I mean, that's how we succeed. To your point, collaboration is the key. How do we work together is the magic that makes us successful. Many, many partnerships with small and large companies out there.
You do. So if there are any CEOs of startup companies who have innovative solutions, they can approach PNC Bank for that kind of stuff is what you're saying, right?
They do it. I at least get at least two emails a day about some new vendor that is telling me about something new. And I do actually look at them. And whenever there's a potential, I would follow up and say, yep, show me what you got. So I mean, there's all this stuff going on when we are evaluating new things. And depending on the fit, especially in case of Gen AI, I know traditionally, of course, there were many tools where we were able to leverage, you know, the central enterprise kind of capabilities across the board for some of those. But now with Gen AI, it will at the end, beyond the broader big players in the tech, you will need some domain-specific tools out there. So if there are small companies investing in niche or process-specific, domain-specific kind of language models that, that can solve particular problems for segments that are dedicated to them, I think that's the future.
So startup CEOs or company CEOs, if you have innovative solutions, she actually does go through your pitch decks and information. And if she finds it of value, she will reach out to you. So that's great. And maybe, Saima, that's how you stay up to date with what's also happening in the industry. Maybe that's also the reason for doing that.
Yeah, so I have to give a kudos to all of those who've been patiently just sending emails. Even if I respond, I receive them. And yes, sometimes I would forward it to those who I think would be related to this topic. And sometimes I would respond myself and I think I have a role to play here. So yeah, I mean, part of my it's give and take, right? Yep. Education happens because we are learning from others as we are educating others too. So it's amazing how we cannot always spend time to measure that even when somebody comes to sell us something, they're giving us something for free.
Yeah, absolutely. And knowledge is so important. Saima, some of the folks want to know if, let's say, they join the organization, are there, in such a fast-moving technology, are there opportunities for reskilling or upskilling within the organization? What is your view on upskilling and reskilling?
My personal view on upskilling and reskilling is that it is more needed now than ever before.
Mm.
That's a one-liner.
Yeah.
Job market is going to change. You will get so many new roles. Nobody is going to stay in the same exact role, doing the same exact thing, using the same exact tools. We will all have to adopt the change. And we will only be successful if we embrace it happily. Like several years ago, we thought people who join a professional company, they would need to know how to use Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint. now they will be expected to know how AI interacts with them every day while they're joining a call or replying to an email. So yeah, reskilling, upskilling, all of that is an essential part of growth. And we shouldn't be shy if we don't know anything. We should embrace it. And I think the more we are willing to say that we don't know, it will be better for us, because yes, we want to know. And there's no shame in saying that I know something, because guess what? No one person can know it all. I mean, for me, for instance, I can say, oh, we are doing it all, but I may not know all the in-depth details that my data scientist knows, because they graduated in those subjects, right? So it's just so important to acknowledge where you have gap and room for improvement, and that applies to every human being.
So I think what you're saying, Sayama, is that reskilling and upskilling is way more important now than it has ever been. And also, one should be able to acknowledge things one doesn't know, because everybody doesn't know everything. And the way technology is moving so fast, if you acknowledge what you don't know, then you can follow up and find ways to get better, right?
That's correct. And I'll actually add one more point while we are at it. One of the advantages of AI would be, and you can see these facts listed in top 10 from AI Index report published by Stanford this year. They say the biggest benefit of artificial intelligence will be for those new workers, let's say, who may not have as highly skilled kind of an experience. They may be somewhat low skilled and not seasoned for several years of work, but they can now use the AI tools to bridge the skill gap very, very quickly and effectively. Wow. Now, that means the organizations have to step up and put the proper guardrails. So we are not just giving it to the, fresh person and trusting their decision all of a sudden because AI is augmenting it. So guardrails will need to be reinforced. However, from a skill gap perspective, it will shrink. It will shrink because of the AI tools as well. And so let's upskill in using AI to take benefit out of that. Right, but be excited that even if you don't have that long number of years in experience, you can actually do pretty significantly similar to somebody who has been doing that job for so long.
I think that's a great point. An opportunity for people coming in, maybe with not the skills, but also a challenge/opportunity for organizations to protect people who've been doing this and for a long period of time, that they don't get displaced, I think is what you're saying, Sayama, right?
So it's not about being displaced. It's like I was giving a very funny example the other day, and I don't know if it applies. It's just simple for me. I use it if you like it or not. I'm like, when we moved from horses to cars, the riders stayed.
Yeah.
Right?
That is true.
Right? So you go from cars to planes, the riders stayed. Yeah. The change in which tools you are using and what kind of work you do every day will change. But the people are going to be there. There is no. I'm not afraid about displacement at all. I'm worried about those who are not willing to adopt.
Yeah. So people who are not willing to adopt should be worried, but people who are going to adopt are all going to be good. Sayama, you spend practically your entire professional life in financial services, true? How do you think AI is transforming the financial services sector? This is for our listeners who might not be in the financial service, and they think of banks as this, this big old retail branches, but that world is changing completely, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you that for last several years, more than 5 years, I can definitely even think of incidents in my mind when most of our, C-level conversations, town halls, all the meetings that we have attended, the topics that we have on the agenda, the presentations that we are seeing, the priorities that we are hearing, they sound completely like a technology company priorities. We are a technology company. I mean, there is no question that we are offering banking services, but we are providing it to those who have technology on their fingertips. So it's changing in a way that every banking product or service that we are offering will have the embedded flavor of AI somewhere where, because clients would crave that. When you're so used to making a Google search and getting an answer from generative AI, you're not going to be laid back easy on your bank if they're not providing you similar services, right? Yeah. So it's just important for us to know that it is expected of every organization that they will be AI equipped, AI smart, they are intelligent, and they are giving what clients need along with their core functions, really enriching with the flavor and aroma of intelligence.
So technology is at the core in financial services. AI is also very important. And as you said, in most cases, these are technology companies who provide financial services, really, as a service. So that, I think, is a very, very important distinction you're making. Saima, generally, from an overall organization standpoint, how should organizations around work to make sure that the responsible and ethical development of AI technologies stays? Because obviously AI has tremendous value in customer service, fraud, improving all of those things. But there's also the issue of responsible and ethical development of AI. So your thoughts on that for organizations?
Absolutely. I think that's an essential part. I mean, the good news is that many organizations that were leveraging any flavor of artificial intelligence for years, for more than two decades now, they have been investing a clear resource set in establishing those responsible, ethical, risk-free kind of AI practices. So where we are governing everything from model risk management, data risk management, security, and whatnot. So all of those things exist already within the organizations. Now, the emphasis on the newly formed standards, the newly published requirements and policies around having these things more explainable, more transparent, has been heightened because of the use of generative AI, because it can generate net new content that you've not seen before. So it's enabling these organizations, as I see from our company and outside in the industry, as I speak to other executives, there is a clear bump in the number of layers of approvals that you would require to launch AI, even if now that's traditional AI, because of the possibilities of generative AI that can come embedded in so many different flavors. There is this added layer of scrutiny in analyzing everything from a risk standpoint, compliance standpoint, customer privacy standpoint, you know, not having bias in your data and all of those stuff. It's there. It's, I think, especially in the regulated industries, it has been very sophisticated and somewhat rewarding to see how structured they are in evolving in their governance process. And I'm personally an advisor for Responsible AI Institute. And I know when I work with them, I hear them always talking about bringing in the, you know, the company policies as well as the government-related published regulations and policies as well to show you the clear, transparent answer on how is your LLM doing, for instance. How much can you trust? Is this having a drift? Does this comply with your guardrails that you have put in place? So there's just so much work done. For those who do not understand the potential risks, it may be dangerous that they're not realizing how valuable it is. For somebody like me, where I want to have full benefit of AI in a safe, secure manner, it's like a blessing to have an opportunity to work with my risk and compliance partners where I learn from them and I educate them. It's always give and take. We learn from each other. Sometimes they may not know all the intricacies, and that's when we or the data scientists can come in and, you know, bridge the gaps. And what they know from the policy standpoint, and they enforce and they work with us to establish those frameworks, it's just beautiful. And I mean, I'm a positive person overall, so I like the backing that, hey, we can challenge each other and we can say to each other, yeah, let's not do this. Let's ask one more question, or this is too much of a question. All of that is fun. We're evolving. We're growing. Let's enjoy this, you know, growing pains and know what is coming ahead is so much more, attractive to look for.
Wow. So a lot of work has been done, as you said, for many years now, accelerated because of Gen AI. And large organizations are really putting a lot of emphasis on governance, compliance, etc. And your work in responsible AI obviously is benefiting you. And I think that's amazing. Saima, now we're going to talk a little bit about some questions that came about people, as I said, who want to learn a little bit about you as to how they can emulate you. What is your typical workday like? I mean, you're juggling so many things. So people want to say, hey, how, when she gets to work or, you know, when she gets to her desk these days, when you get to work is basically when you get to your desk. How does she manage her time? What is her day like, etc.? Is it all meetings, meetings?
Oh, yes. There are meetings. There are sometimes at least 3 to 4 meetings happening at the same time, and I have to pick and choose which one I'm going to go to. But it's all fun, right? I mean, it's all important stuff. We do have really, really good, strong leaders who can take care of things on their own. I'm copied when we are starting something new, but I don't have to be there all the time. Our teams can take care of it. instead of saying how what I do in a day, it may be more useful if I say how my week is, because you know what, I don't get to do everything in one day.
Of course.
Because of, you know, sometimes the details are required. So yeah, as I said in the beginning, it starts from having partnership with the business, having understanding of where there are opportunities. Step two, let's work on business value. Let's work on, creating a story. Does it have enough ROI for us to invest further in? Let's say ROI was figured out the next part of the day or part of the week. Can we do a tech assessment? How do we, I have to lead our teams to get it on the right, you know, track to get some sort of a POC working. There are going to be some other projects that have already kicked off. Their development is going. I have to go back and check. Are we managing scope well? Are we delivering what the customer expected? Are we having a good plan for piloting? Do we have training manuals getting ready for making sure that people can use and, you know, they feel comfortable and excited about using the tool? There may be things that are already in production. So business as usual can never be taken for granted. Stability, you know, having that, you know, always 24/7 availability and making sure that, you know, incidents are taken care of and we are keeping our tech stack up to date. We are not leaving or forgetting about the vulnerabilities that might be coming up in the code that we just created a month ago. All of those things, like business as usual, tech non-discretionary, all of that is a part of our rules. And then making sure, once again, the most important part, staying up to speed on the industry trends, what's coming up new technology-wise, industry-wise, use case-wise. There are research, I mean, I love studying. So what are the successful top use cases for each of these AI areas? Where should I invest now versus a couple of months down the road? What is my roadmap for each of my business domains? So there are segments in the company and I create my portfolio to say, we are doing AI projects in this area and that area and this area and that area. And this is the status. This is in production. This is in development. So there's a good portfolio view or a dashboard. And then I'm like, you know, okay, satisfied with what we are doing here. Everybody has some engagement going on. Wherever there is value, I would go to the monitoring dashboards, everybody's favorite word, to watch. How are we doing? We deployed solutions. How are our models performing? Are they accurate? How many documents we have processed, for instance? Do we need to retrain anything? Do we need to reuse these models and give it to somebody else? And guess what? Do we have access to data now that we did not have before? Can we make more use of that data to once again give the very outstanding client experience so I don't have to ask repeat questions because I had your data? I can, when you're filling the second page of the form of the digital screen, you don't have to fill that again. Can I give it to you and you confirm that for me? So, you know, I know I can't go on and on, but it's just like all flavors of business and technology and monitoring and business as usual. And of course, our team coaching and training. And then for me, myself as well, talking to those who I look up to. How am I doing? You know, how can we do better? Give me candid feedback. And so it's like, you know, giving back as well as seeking the advice that you need from industry experts as well as your own leadership.
Wow, Saima, I am tired just listening. I don't know if anybody wants to your job anymore. At least, thank God, that's a lot. You talked about talking to leaders that you look to, etc. Mentorship is a big part of this community that we are building. What is your view on mentorship? Do you have mentors? And for people who are listening, who are looking for mentors, any word of advice for them, Saima?
Yeah, I think if anybody wants to grow, they have to have one, at least one, I would say. And for different areas, you may need more. So in my life, for instance, in my college, university life, my mom was my mentor. Even if she was not going with me to my college or university, she would still give me advice. If I'm stuck somewhere, she would say, take a break, come back, you can do it. And that positive attitude where you know somebody knows that you're struggling, but you have to take a break and do something else. You need sometimes that fresh advice. Then at work, of course, you have your leadership. I have been very fortunate throughout my career, having very, very good managers. And then at home, I have my husband who can give me all stretch assignments that I like it or I don't. I have to do them. And that has enabled me to know what I can do better that I never knew maybe. So mentors are very important. They are the people who are giving you feedback that you can trust. Because they're not giving you feedback to criticize. They're giving you feedback to improve what you can, contribute.
I think, Saima, you're saying is they come in many different shapes and sizes. Your mom, your husband, your boss, your peer. Even sometimes you learn from your employees, also people who you work too.
Oh, yes. All the times. I mean, yep, I see people on the team, they're doing something and I feel inspired. And I tell them, and I say, I'm going to start doing this like you next time onward. So yeah, you're learning. But yeah, the concept of mentorship is where you can seek feedback and feel confident and feel it's okay to be vulnerable in front of them, admitting that you're not good at everything, but let's just make use of your strengths and improve where you need improvement.
I think one of the themes that Saima keeps touching upon, especially with this technology, is be open to admitting where you are weak or you might not be as strong and be vulnerable. I think that's a great, great message for our listeners. Saima, looking ahead, what emerging trends do you see shaping the future of AI in your industry?
Well, I think the most obvious trend that we're all seeing is the use of generative AI, just changing the game at so many levels. But the advice, if I can give to those who are trying to get value out of AI initiatives and they want to do it sooner, yes, AI has a lot of power and a lot of impact possible for your organizations. But if your organizations are still working on the risk frameworks or the guardrails around it, and you are limited, somewhat feeling constrained at some times, being regulated or monitored and whatnot, there is still plenty of opportunities within traditional AI. If you look at it from an industry, 30 years of study, 50 years of study, you will see machine learning has a lot to offer. And if you look at the client feedback, there are still close to 50% or more who want to take more benefit of predictive analytics and things like that. So trend analysis and whatnot, even for fraud detection kind of use cases, it's just about machine learning sometimes. So I know that emerging trend is Gen AI, and we will use that. We will see that. We will breathe it everywhere. But there is still a lot more that we can do without Gen AI as well, is what I would say. A
lot you can do without Gen AI, predicted analytics. Also is a very important aspect. I think great points. Saima, at the end, we do a lightning round of questions. These are very simple questions. Just gives our users a little light touch of things that you prefer. And these are just one word answers. So let's give you a quick test. So on AI. So Saima, supervised or unsupervised learning?
My answer cannot be one word, can be a sentence. Is it okay?
Yeah, that can
So if you have labeled data, do it supervised. If you don't have labeled data, do unsupervised.
Cloud-based AI or on-prem solutions?
Depends on the use case. You would need both.
Now, don't give both on every answer now, Saima, please. So far, you are 2 for 2. GPUs or TPUs? Is it both?
TPUs for performance, GPUs for flexibility.
Now, this one, you have to give me one. TensorFlow or PyTorch?
Oh, no, I get flexibility. Oh. If you want flexibility, you want TensorFlow.
Inference or learning?
Learning to infer.
Okay. That's fine. Fantastic. Saima, for our global listeners, any final words of wisdom or recommendation to people who are navigating the journey, or your peers who are listening, who are, chief AI officers of insurance companies, large insurance companies, large manufacturing companies, and we've had them all, telecom companies, etc. Any final words of wisdom or recommendations?
At an organization level, it's very important to be methodical and structured in how you're approaching this. Having a proper framework, it will be a big differentiator. At an individual level, staying positive and always being willing to collaborate and give back. It's only in giving back that we earn anything.
Great words. Be willing to collaborate and give back. And I think in AI, that's even more important. Well, I think it's important, everything, but I think, Saima, it's very, very important in AI. And that's what we are trying to do. Saima, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and experiences in leading AI initiatives at PNC. Really, you learned a lot about what you do, how you do, about the world of AI, the AI leadership that you're bringing, for people to know the cool things that are happening at PNC. I mean, people might just be going to the ATM, but they don't really understand that how you're making customer service better. You're making, things so much better. And, financial service is very, very important, whether we like it or not. It's a key aspect of how we get paid, how we spend money. So thanks so much for taking the time. And thanks to our listeners. till our next episode. Till then, stay curious and keep innovating. Saima, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be with you.
Thank you.